It's Tuesday, November 6th, 2018, and you're listening to episode 500 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 42 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chip.
All right, so we are on episode 500 right now. Now, this is not the 500th episode we've released, because if you throw in bonus episodes, PSAs, back when you guys were doing Fear and Root, the actual plays, the negative episodes, I would wager we are probably closer to 700. But per the regular episodes, we are on 500. And
unlike every milestone before, it's coming out after the episode numbered 99 right before.
Yes, so this will come out between 499 and 501 and probably come out on time or they're very close to it. All right. So we put the question up on Patreon. And by the way, if you want to back us on Patreon, patreon.com/feartheboot, all one word, fear the boot. I'll probably put a link to it in the show notes. And we have a $1 level where we ask people questions about what they'd like to see us do and where they'd like to see things go. And so I put the question out there. I said, hey, we're coming up on episode 500. What do you guys want us to do? Do you want us to do anything special? Do you want us to just do a regular episode like this was any other episode number? And the near unanimous response was people wanted to hear us do sort of a meta show, a combination, kind of retrospective, behind the scenes, where we think the future is headed. So that's what we're going to talk about. And I will in advance.
What if I remember nothing?
Well, that's okay, because like, I remember most of it. So the...
just make it up off the top of your head. That's what you do. You're an improv GM.
Yeah, I'm the
You're improv
guy.
Podcast guy.
That's right. We were awesome 10 years ago. We had turntables and a disco ball.
We had two turntables and a microphone.
Right.
That's why we had terrible sound quality. So let's work through the history of the show. Some of the things that have occurred behind the scenes, including some stories we've never told before.
Then, like the no pants dance off?
I think we did tell the gay chicken with... Have we told the gay chicken story?
Which one?
We'll get to that.
All right.
So we're going to get to that. And one of the things I am going to answer, it's been a question a lot of people have asked, is am I going to do anything with Skies of Glass beyond the actual play? So when we get to that part of the podcast talking about the future, I will get to that question. So let's start at the start. Where Fear the Boot started, for anyone that's not heard the story, was back in 2005. So you were talking a point in history when podcasting, if we define podcasting as the mixture of an audio file, most likely an MP3, with an RSS feed or an XML feed to syndicate the shows. That's what RSS stands for, is really simple syndication.
2005, Wayne, you and I were still in college.
No, I was out.
Oh, okay. I graduated in 2006.
Yeah. So podcasting had just kind of become a thing. And we had a former host, Mike, mm-hmm. Mike K, who his dad was, I don't know if he still does or not, but at the time ran a human resources consulting firm. And he knew I knew a fair amount about technology and said, well, what do you know about podcasting? And I said, well, not really anything, but I'll take a look into it and see what I can find out. And I helped him set up an HR podcast where he would talk about human resources and personnel related issues and then go and interview other people and such. And I helped him with the audio and getting
it still up anywhere.
I have no idea, to be completely honest. And the show had a lot of problems. For starters, the best conversations were always the ones they had when they ditched format and started talking with the mics running. And I even told him as much. But I did that and had so much fun. And I'd never messed with audio stuff before. But I had so much fun. I'm like, man, I got to do this. So what do I do? Well, I can't do a video game podcast because by this point, Penny Arcade had one, which right. they dropped for a while. And I think now are doing again, or I'm not really sure. 1UP, which was a big deal at the time, was doing one. I can't do video games. So what can I do? Where can I actually find an audience? It's like, well, I'll do role-playing games. And so there's an inside joke that we'd had in our gaming group for years because Chad used to wear these big old ass combat boots And when he wore out a pair, we'd hang them from the ceiling and then use them like somebody made a terrible character sheet. He would stomp it with one of the boots and leave this big, nasty boot print on it. So out of that came the joke of Fear the Boot. It was a memorable name. It's easy to spell. The domain name was available. And thus Fear the Boot started. And I mean, really, the very, very early years of podcasting at all. And we didn't think anyone would listen. We didn't think this was going to go anywhere. The original lineup was supposed to be me, Chad, Kevin, Tim, and Mike.
Yeah.
Of those people, everyone thought the podcast was going to fail.
I didn't.
Yeah, except
I didn't
you.
Know what it was.
Except you.
I thought it was a Shadowrun game. I didn't read the email fully.
Except you. But the other three all thought it was going to fail. One of them told me it was a poorly thought out idea. Nobody was going to tune in. And
why would you tell someone that for a hobby? I mean, it's not like you're saying, hey, you know what? I'm making six figures a year and I've got this job that I love and I'm a leader in my field. And you know what? I think I'm just going to quit and go work at McDonald's. No, this is a hobby.
Yeah.
Why would you say? Wayne says, hey, I'm going to take up guitar. How dare you, Wayne?
It was a rather scathing email about how this was a really bad idea and it was going to fail miserably and nobody was going to like it. And I mean, the phrase, this is poorly thought out, was used in there. And I mean, it was just like, wow.
Was he at least trying to like protect your money?
No.
Because I know you were investing money.
No. Well, and yeah, that was before anything was bought. This was an email. That was the only thing that existed.
Yeah, yeah. And it bombed right there.
Okay. No, he's just a dick.
And one of them might never even showed up. Now, he did later become a host for a run of episodes. But Kevin and Tim, I think, both did one or two episodes each, and then they dropped out because they thought it was a joke.
So well, it is a joke, but not like they think it's
not
a joke.
Right. So it was just me and Chad, really. And what ended up happening is, so we'll back up to Chad.
Yeah.
So with Chad, I went out to buy the equipment from Guitar Center. That was down by Chad's place. And at the time, I was living, I think, in St. Peter's at this point, which is way up north and west where Chad lived and where he and I grew up. And so I went down there, was by his place to go buy this stuff. And he's like, so why are you buying all this? And I'm like, I sent you an email. He's like, I didn't read it. And I'm like, that does not surprise
really
me.
It was really long. So it was about Shadowrun. And I'm like, oh God, Shadowrun campaign.
So I explained it to him. And he's like, yeah, screw it. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And so he and I started recording.
This is a terrible idea. It's poorly thought out. Let's do it.
I had a little bit of a struggle because of the fact that because everyone else was ditched on, it's just the two of us.
Yeah.
And so he sends out this text message or what, a phone call, whatever it was, page. I don't remember what we were using that year.
Right.
To Johnny G and to Adam saying, hey, what are you guys doing? Do you guys want to get in on this? And they're like, it, why not? And so they came by, dropped in. And that really created the first coherent group of Fear the Boot. The original logo for Fear the Boot, and I'm going to give credit and blame where it is due. And you'll understand why I say blame in a moment. Because the credit here will go to Tim because he drew the first logo for Fear the Boot. It was a hand-drawn boot, much like the one we have today, which somebody later redrew for us. We actually went through three logos, so I'll tell that story here as we go. But it was a hand-drawn boot, and then below that in a hand-drawn typesetting. So it was just written letters. It was not like a computer font. Said Fear the Boot. And the original boot was white and then bright red and bright blue. It looked like a bomb pop. It was terrible.
It was painful to look at.
Yes.
It was not like a patriotic spread of colors.
And we're like, okay, the logo's all right. Can we do something that doesn't feel like being raped by the 4th of July?
And a little bit muted, maybe? And
so he redid it with the colors that we still use today, which is that mid to light shade brown with the
tones.
Yeah, with mostly it's kind of a drab green and then golder or yellowish sort of highlights. The colors we still use.
Yeah.
And I think we seem to tend mostly towards green and gold, but there is some brown in the logo.
I work my butt off to push hard that green is in nearly everything we do. It's in our forums, in our logos, in everything, because green's my favorite color.
Yeah, the current logo color scheme, it's a weird one in that I'm not generally a big fan of earth tones.
Mm-hmm.
but it worked.
Yeah.
And it looked kind of like a military boot or something like that. And by pure coincidence, I've got a Revy's figure from our statue from Black Lagoon. And she wears boots that look almost identical to the Fear the Boot boots, which Fear the Boot came around long before Black Lagoon. So it's just pure coincidence. But I should still sue them. But since we have a copyright or trademark or whatever on boots. But anyway, so that run of show, that run of host continued for a while. And we really did not think we would make it all that far.
Right.
By about show 30.
I don't think that there was ever a plan of saying, well, we're going to do 50 and then we're done. Or we're going to do 10 and we're done. Or we're going to do 100 and we're done. There was never a plan in point, but there was never an idea of saying, we're just going to keep going and going and going.
Well, we thought for sure we'd be out of ideas, that we'd have nothing new to say.
And then you came up with Brain On.
It's true.
That's later. We'll come back to that. But
thanks, Wayne. People have actually stopped asking me what Brain On was. Thank you.
Oh, then we shouldn't explain it. We should just tell them to send Chad an email and ask, what is Brain On?
Yeah.
And when is it going to come out?
We did the first episode a few years ago, so, you know, anytime now.
But the show, we didn't have any sense that there'd be more to it. And one of the people, and I know he's gained kind of a mixed reputation in the gaming industry, but one of the people that really was instrumental to helping Fear the Boot really be a thing was Ryan Dancy. Mm-hmm. And he did a lot to encourage us early on. He was the first major name in the gaming industry to actually notice us. We didn't reach out to him. He reached out to us. And to really encourage us to keep going, to believe that there was a potential in new media to shape the gaming industry. And if you look not just at podcasting, but at Twitter, at blogs, at YouTube, oh, yeah. I mean, we, at the time, it was all about, oh, you got to get your books out and your magazines out and things like that. Mm-hmm. That's not true anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw that coming. And he,
well, and speaking of seeing things coming, we talked about predictions. That's a man that likes his predictions.
Well, that was how we got his attention, too, was we did a response. He made a prediction article for where he thought the gaming industry would be in a year or two. And we did a rebuttal to it. And thinking nobody's going
right.
to pay it. Right. I mean, maybe mom's tuning in. And he listened to our episode and responded to it. Like, wow, okay, let's see if we can get this guy on. Mm-hmm. And so he did. He came on. We did that early run of episodes pretty convinced that the show was already on death's door, not because of lack of listeners, because podcasting has a fixed cost. Whether we're consumed by one person or every single person on the planet, my cost to do the show is fundamentally the same. The only deciding factor is, do we have the desire to do the show and do we have the topics to actually meaningfully fill a show to keep ourselves interested? And by episode 20 or 30, we thought we were already in the show's twilight. Obviously, that didn't occur. And one of the things that Ryan Dancy said to me at the time is he said, you just keep pursuing this hobby. And he said, you are going to be very surprised by how much there is to talk about.
Yeah.
And to this day,
we have never covered a topic twice.
Never. Right. We're going to do the zero to published.
Right. At some absolutely. Point here.
But no, I mean, seriously, though, there are episodes we've come back to, and we're going to talk about changing opinions and such here in a bit. But there are so many things that we do actually cover for the first time because we play a game or we observe something about the hobby or product comes out, whatever it is. And we, like, wow, we haven't talked about this. We haven't thought about this. Storytelling of any kind, much less interactive storytelling that adds rules and social dynamics and all such, there is so much to talk about. You know, if you run out of things to talk about, you're not paying attention to what you're doing. And so we managed to push on from that, and the show remained surprisingly stable for about a year and a half. And we did our first Gen Con-ish. We showed up, didn't know it was in the Eastern time zone, so we showed up late, missed a big podcaster meet and greet, walked around for a bit and left, did the con more in earnest the following year.
Yeah.
It was not long after that we had the first Fear the Con, and things seemed like they were going pretty stably and pretty well. And I'm not going to go into the details. Either you know them or you don't. But there was a very big and very profound. This was not a minor disagreement. This was not a minor, you know, difference of opinions. A huge issue came up between me and Adam. And let's say you know that story or you don't. He and I had a huge falling out. It did not just involve me. It involved other people. And he was removed from the show. He is the only host in the entire run of Fear the Boot that has been removed. We've had hosts that have left for various reasons, usually because of other time constraints. They have kids. They move out of town, things like that. Their job changes. But it's the only host that was forced to leave the show. And it's kind of interesting because there's someone right now, and I forget his name, who's working through our show catalog in order, which makes me cringe. But he commented that the show seemed to really change in quality about the time that it had a hosting change up right there. And he's right. And here's why. Fear the Boot, because it is a hobby product, it follows the ebb and flow of our social and emotional states. I'll tell you right now, it's not always the case, but usually when you hit that stretch of not just a bad episode, but we have a stretch of really dry, down-tempo, shitty episodes, it's probably because one or more of us are going through something really rough in our lives. I mean, it really shakes things up. It changes things up, but not in a good way. Whereas when we're doing well and our friend group is stable and our lives are stable and everything's coming up Milhouse, the quality of the show reflects that. You know, it's much more up-tempo. We tend to have much better discussions and things like that. But the show went through a casting change about there because Adam was removed from the show. Luke chose to leave. Mm-hmm. John stayed on the show, but he, about that point, went first down to law school and then went to Rome for a semester. Mm-hmm. Then from there, came back from Rome, but went to his actual law school, not his pre-law or whatever, but his actual law school in a different part of Missouri, and is now living in a different yet part of Missouri. And so he's just had one thing after another move him around where he's been a very inconsistent part of the show. Chris, the dude just can't get a solid internet connection to save his life. Because he moved from, I think he was originally living in Minnesota when we started the show, and then he moved to Iowa, and now he's in Alaska, literally, and his internet connection is just garbage everywhere he goes. And I would love to have him on the show more, but who else was in there? So Tex was in there for a while.
Yeah.
And then
Axe.
Yeah, Tex got pulled away by other constraints. He went through some personal issues that aren't mine to discuss. Then he ended up having kids and things like that, just pulled his time. He wasn't available.
Was Dawn before then or after?
Dawn was while John was in Rome.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, of course, she obviously, after being pregnant, had a kid. And so that kind of changed up things for Dawn. Johan was on the show, but he lives about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from St. Louis.
Yeah. And Johan is way down the line from this.
Yeah. I'm just kind of running through the hosts as I think about him. And he would love to still be on the show. And he is welcome anytime he wants to be. But his job has changed such that it is much harder for him to get up to St. Louis to do the recordings.
I don't understand why that's a problem. I mean, he's got that deep baritone bass voice. He can just start speaking.
He probably could.
So the Missouri mics would pick it up.
From anywhere in the state, and we would hear it.
Julia had a kid. Brodor got a new job. They can show up at any point.
Julia first had some health problems. Then she had a kid. She's local, still welcome to be on the show anytime she wants. I actually still see Julia fairly often. Mm-hmm. I see her probably once or twice a week, but she just is having trouble finding time to come up here to be on the show. Brodor, yeah, he was a regular and then he got pulled by his job and he's now got his Thursday night back, which is why he's on the AP, but
Great.
He does not yet have his Tuesday night backs. He is trying to because he wants to be back on the show again.
Sure.
Once again, we'd love to have him back, but he's struggling to get his Tuesday nights open again to be on the show.
You know, he asked me, he's like, well, which would be better for you guys? Because you only have one night, right? You know, he can't do both the show and the AP. And he was like, which would it be better for you guys? Would it be better for me to be on the show or for me to be on the AP? And I go, to be honest with you, it would be better if you were on the show, but I want you on the AP. I want to role play with you, which is why we do this show. We do it for role playing games. So I was completely selfish, and I denied you all Brodor. Listen to the AP.
Yeah, and so this is why, though, the show has gone through so many iterations of its cast. Is the show has now been going on 12 and a half years.
We all avoided the one that we just don't want to mention. Pat died.
Pat died. And, of course, Pat...
Lazy bastard.
This is, hey, he had the cheapest excuse for getting out of the show.
Yeah.
He couldn't come up with anything else. He didn't have the guts to just tell me he didn't want to do it anymore. So he got cancer and died.
Yeah. Now we have to feel sympathy for him, and we get all sad.
And watch after his wife and his kids. Yep. And it was a prick move.
It was.
Yeah. He had to leave the show first because
he had cancer.
The cancer, yep. The health.
Yeah.
And
his health was in decline for about a year and a half to 2 years. And then, of course, he ultimately died. And so that's why Pat is obviously not on the show anymore. But things like that are why so many hosts have come and gone. And it is so difficult. Like a lot of people said, man, we'd love to hear a reunion show where you bring all these people back. And it's like, it's not that I'm against it with like maybe one or two exceptions. Mm-hmm. It's more that I don't think you understand how hard it would be to actually get these people in the same place at the same time.
There is like a less than 1% group of people who were on the show no longer who just don't feel like being on the show anymore. The others, as far as I know, really want to be on the show, and life has moved them away that far.
As far as I understand it, from everything, you know, they're still active with us as friends. Mm-hmm. They still talk to us about the show. If tomorrow the circumstances changed for John, Johan, Julia, Brodor, and probably some others I'm not thinking of off the top of my head.
Oh, I'm sure we've forgotten people.
Chris is another one. They would be back on this show in a heartbeat. And by the way, I do have some potentially good news, which is actually things might be changing on the John front. Hmm. He may actually be moving back to St. Louis here in the next couple of months. Possibly some things are still up in the air. If he does, I hope. Certainly, he will be more than welcome that he will be back on the show again as a regular fixture. But yeah, for most of these people, it's just life took them another direction. And I mean, for a moment, think about your own life. 12 and a half years. How many jobs have you been through? How many people have come and gone? How many people, I don't mean to be dark here, how many people do you know, family members, friends, whatever, who have passed away, who you've had falling outs with, who have simply moved somewhere else? They've had a kid or gotten married and you just can't see them as often because they're busy with other stuff, or they got that job that works them second shift. Whatever it is, if you think about the past 12 and a half years, I would wager you've gone through a lot of change in your life. And so have we. But the difference is ours is kind of a matter of public record. Mm-hmm. You know, other people see what happens with that. And so they wonder, oftentimes not really knowing, where did so-and-so go? And why has the show changed?
Yeah, Chet left the show a couple times for jobs. There was the obvious early on big jump, but there were a couple of small stints in there where it's like, okay, guys, I'm between jobs right now. I'm not going to, I need to conserve. I need to search.
Yep.
And those were only for a couple weeks at a time or maybe a month at most. But yeah, those even happened.
Yeah. The joys of IT consulting.
Yeah, and there were times in there where I was looking at either my own life or the hosting lineup or whatever, and I was making the call mentally of, at some point, do I declare this show dead, and or do I permanently change the format to be a solo show or a solo plus interview, like a solo plus guest? So it's like a lounge type show. And there were times I had to contemplate that pretty seriously of, are the hosts changing over so fast? Or I've got a show, and for this next 3 weeks, I literally don't know who, if anyone, is going to be available. What do I do? You know, is this the end of the show?
People always talk about not so much anymore. People used to always talk about the old lineup. But when you look at what they referred to as the old lineup, how long did it really last? Versus you, me, and Chad have been consistent since like 250 on or so?
Yeah.
Probably longer than that. I mean, because... Wayne, I don't know what your first episode was, but I would wager it's probably in the 100s.
Yes, I don't remember what number it was. Actually, it would have been before 200 because I remember 200.
Yeah. So I say, Wayne, I think you were in the 100s and we are now at 500. The longest consistent hosts on this show are in this order, me followed by Chad, followed by Wayne. And so what you are hearing,
and I think followed by Pat.
Yeah, Pat is probably number four.
And then probably John or Chris.
Yeah.
I would say, I don't know. I don't know which of those two I'd put next. But the three of us have been the longest. Okay, in terms of length of time on the show, it's been John. In terms of episodes on the show, I don't know. It'd be a coin toss.
Yeah.
Between. I'm sure there is an answer to that. But this is the longest consistent lineup of the show. It has been the three of us, plus or minus whoever's in the fourth chair. And right now, I mean, it's no secret, unless you're a freaking moron, that Caleb has been filling that fourth chair on and off.
What?
Yeah. Believe that one. He moved.
How did he sneak past his fake show where we test him out? I thought we were going to fire that guy.
And so, yeah, I mean, we're always looking to keep the show lineup fresh and filled. And
what was really nice is there was a period in there where there were enough of us in town. John was in town. Julia didn't have a kid yet. Johan was coming up some, where we actually would go out and schedule who's going to be on this week.
Yeah, because we had too many.
And then Chad and I would take weeks off to do. Chad did the board game meetup group. Mm-hmm. I did Pathfinder Society during that time.
There were times when we gave Dan time off, too.
Yeah, where there's a handful of episodes I wasn't on. Not many. But there is a handful of episodes that I was not on. I was in the house, but I was not on the mics.
Yeah, that was kind of nice having that many people that we could trade in and out. And it also gave some fresh voices.
Mm-hmm. I've got several things I want to talk about here still.
Are you going to bring the funny?
I'm not going to bring the funny.
I'm going to go first before you go, Dan.
Okay.
Because there are a couple of things that we used to talk about in the back rooms as we talked about shows.
Mm-hmm.
We would talk about, you know, trying to figure out what we need to do for the next shows and all that. And there were phrases that would come up. One of them was, bring the funny. One of the other ones was, we need to have conflict.
Yeah.
Because the best episodes are when we fight with each other.
Well, maybe not fight, but we did have a problem where we had too many episodes in a row where we threw out a topic.
I believe RPG should have dice.
Yep.
Okay, that's our show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was boring podcasting. Not to say you want genuine conflict.
Dice, how dare you?
Yeah. If there's no disagreement, if there's nothing to actually debate, it's a boring show.
Yep. Well, and that's the thing. When I look back, I agree. I think some of those where we get like Chris versus Chad or Chris
versus Chad or Dan versus Chad.
Chad versus Chad.
Some of those were really good.
What?
Some of those were really good debates. But we don't really have to talk about things like that anymore. But it used to be a big thing. It was like, we need to bring the funny. We need to have the contentious topics. We need to. And that was something we would always think about for a period there. There are phases of the show. And that was one phase where it was like, in the back, I know there were other phrases, there were other things. Mm-hmm. But those are the two that stand out at me that we just don't think about anymore. We don't need to.
Well, and it's kind of interesting because one of the other things to think about is in 12 and a half years, not only has a lot changed in our lives, we've gotten older. And by virtue of getting older, we've mellowed out. And I want to talk about how time in the show has changed us. It's on my, I've got some notes here, things I want to talk about. But we've gotten more mellow. We do still disagree, but I don't think we get as animated about it as we once did.
It's not that passionate debate that it used to be. Because in the end, we're going to realize that both are right anyway.
Or workable. You know, if you're having fun and the game's working, who cares?
I have a perception.
Like right now, one of our earliest episodes was slamming the Freak Show games where everybody has to be something bizarre. Yeah. I am in a Freak Show D&D game right now. There's not a single normal thing at the table. It's my Waymick. Somebody else is playing an ASMR, which is the angel version of a tiefling. Somebody's playing a tiefling who is raised by gnolls. Somebody's playing a dragonborn kin, I'm not sure what. Somebody's playing a part giant or part elemental or something. It's a walking freak show, and we're having a ton of fun.
Chad used to bash D&D, and he's running a 5th edition game and loving it.
Well, they finally made a good version of D&D. That's not my fault. I have a perception, though, that times have actually changed. Like, attitudes within the role-playing game community has changed. I think that 12, 15 years ago or so, role-playing games were very much, they were a lot more structured. I mean, you had places like The Forge, and you had these other, like, independent sort of role-playing game makers who were on the fringe. Yeah. And they made these story-type games, and they were weird and different. It's like you had real role-playing. You had D&D, and you had Battletech, and you had Traveler, and you had, you know, these sort of very solid...
And one counterpoint to that was World of Darkness.
World of Darkness was, the weird people who dress in all black play. And sure, it's legit. Whatever. We'll allow that. But then I think that there was a general sort of, I don't want to say rebellion, but there was a push to, you know, maybe we kind of need to get the stick out of our ass.
And one of the other things that happened was drive-through RPG.
That was the big change. Was you were right at the start of two things. And I think they were related, which was the real boom of the distribution, the broad distribution of independent role-playing games. Because no longer did you have to staple them together at Kinko's and pray that the guy at your game shop would put them on the shelf.
Right.
You could go online, drop a PDF, whatever, and RPG Now or drive-through RPG and things like that made that distribution a whole lot easier. The second thing was the D20 OGL. Made it so that people suddenly had a immediate buy-in to the product.
Right.
So you drop something that nobody's ever heard of. I've got my whatever system. People might try it. People might not. But with that whole D20 OGL, people go out there and buy their D20 product. And if it had good reviews on RPG Now or Drive-Thru RPG or whatever it was called at the time, they could plug that into their game and run with it. And I think the two, they were not related. But I think the sudden surge of indie people able to distribute their product, plus the D20 OGL making that more attractive to the consumer, drove that age of independent games that were really experimenting. Yeah. And suddenly you got Burning and you got Fate and you got...
Well, and think of it this way. When we first started, that was barely just in its infancy, taking off in certain communities and such. And we were saying controversial things like, you don't have to have 2.5 combats in every session, followed by, you don't have to have any combats in your session.
You don't have to use minis.
You don't have to use minis or terrain. You don't have to use a GM screen. Holy shit. That lit the internet on our side of the world on fire. Well, and these things now, we say this kind of stuff, and we're like, yeah, that's called role-playing, guys. Come on. Back then, believe it or not, that was controversial.
Yeah.
Well, when you look for the original, there's the OGL. Now, if you look at current systems, you've got things like Powered by the Apocalypse.
Right.
Same concept. Somebody made the core game.
The Apocalypse has.
You have other people that are creative, but they're not creative to the level that they want to start from scratch.
Yeah.
They want to take a base and put their world on top of it.
Well, they want to focus on the game, not the rules.
Yes. So you have Fate, you have Powered by the Apocalypse, even Savage Worlds is one that can be used as a core with things over it. And that's something that's really changed
how portable rules works. System. Yeah, portable rule systems did not used to be a thing.
GURPS. Done. Well, that was it.
GURPS.
But even there, GURPS was all of the books published that use the GURPS core thing, still the same company.
Yeah.
You didn't have independent games based off of GURPS.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. GURPS was meant that you could take your setting and sort of carry it to GURPS, I guess. But yeah, it was not like, I don't know. I'm sure there was like a couple of settings that people had written that way, but that's not for the most part how that was structured. It wasn't.
You couldn't play that. You couldn't take that setting book and play it without the core GURPS book.
Yeah, the closest you got to that was Palladium with their... They tried for an interchangeable rule system that...
But their rule systems were terrible.
Well, it was a terrible rule system, and it only kind of worked. I mean, even they finally had to admit it with... Was it Nightspawn/Nightbane, where they gave up on MDC and whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, they even admitted it's not going to work. And yeah, it had all kinds of issues of its own.
I'm thinking back to the conflict thing. I'm trying to think of what is the most controversial thing that I could say right now in the context of role-playing games. No, not like a racist comment or something, but about role-playing games, what is the most controversial thing that I could say that would get people around the mics vehemently disagreeing with me and then people writing me emails and telling me how wrong I am?
Anything about D&D.
Well, see, that... That's not a controversial opinion. That leads down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the game that I swear, and this is kind of a bit of comedy from behind the scenes doing the show. We can do an episode and talk about anything. If at some point we make one passing comment about D&D, that was the episode.
Yep. That's all anybody ever heard. Oh, that annoys the hell out of me.
I mean, I'm sure it is for many reasons, because for a lot of people, it was their first game. For a lot of people, it's the game they've played the most over the years. If you include Pathfinder in there, it has a lot of organized play. And so I think if there's a reason why people feel so, they take it so personally. They and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, this is something that's part of identity to them. Mm-hmm. And that game, I swear, inspires more of a surge of emotion and whatever, I don't know, maybe whatever it is, than anything else. As if we mentioned D&D, we can say wackadoodle stuff about, once again, keeping this to role-playing games, about anything else under the sun, and people do not care half so much,
a
tenth as much.
And back in the day, people really cared. I mean, if I hate to go back to it, but it just blows my mind that holding the opinion that you can have an entire gaming session without a single combat in it was wild back then.
Oh.
In 2006, that got long ranting forum posts and blog comments.
Dice fudging conversations.
Dice fudging, yep.
That's one that brings out, it's one that used to bring out the real debates.
Right.
So let's talk about some of the funny kind of behind, really random behind the scenes stuff. So the logos we've been through. All right. So there's, I teased this before. I guess we've actually been through four logos, because there was the draft that Tim originally gave me that was red, white, and blue.
Mm.
And I actually had to dig back in my email and see if I can find that. If I can't, I will link all of the logos in our show notes. So we had that one was the first one, which got scrapped before the show even launched. The second one was a hand-drawn version that's pretty similar to the one we have now. Now, somewhere around there were two logos that occurred about the same time. And I don't remember which one came first, because they were pretty close together. There was somebody who was a listener of the show who redid our logo and cleaned it up quite a bit. They actually did it as a really nice, like, Photoshop or Illustrator job. And this is the logo that we currently use. And I would love to give this person credit, but the problem is they gave it to me some years back. And I think it might have even been linked through a forum PM. And our original forums died and could not be recovered to the new version of PHPBB. And so I don't have the ability to give credit. Mm. I wish I could, but somebody redrew that logo and gave it to us. And if you want to identify yourself, I will happily credit you in the next show or the next show we record after I get that email. I don't know who it was. But about that time, I also got to be good friends with a guy. If anyone's a fan of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it was created by two guys, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, I think is the other guy. Kevin Eastman bought a comic book magazine called Heavy Metal, which, if nothing else, you're probably familiar with through the movie Heavy Metal. All right. There's a graphic novel sort of magazine that is based on that. It was originally, I think, French, and it got imported into America, and there was an American version of it. And I became pretty good friends with Kevin Eastman's best friend, who's also one of the recurring cover artists for Heavy Metal, a guy by the name of Lorenzo. And so Lorenzo did an alternate logo for us. I had a girl, basically like a pinup type girl, wearing the Fear the Boot boots and sitting on the name Fear the Boot. And that was very briefly our logo. And the reason it was very briefly our logo is people responded and generally said, okay, it doesn't really bother me per se, but it has the potential to be kind of off-putting because of the fact that it's a cheesecake picture and whatever.
I think the most common feedback I saw on that short time was, it's not that I'm offended, it's just, that's not Fear the Boot.
That's not what
That's not the image that you project. That is not you.
Yeah, we're not the Howard Stern of podcasting. And so what we ended up doing was I moved that logo away from the show itself. And when we stole a Cafe Press store, I put it on the Cafe Press store, and I will let you guess what our number one selling logo item was on the Cafe Press store was the pinup girl. She wildly outsold everything else on that storefront, which is now long gone. Not the logo, but I still have the high res of the logo and everything. And I still talk to Lorenzo. He's a great guy. But that was a middle logo that was only used for, like, I mean, seriously, it was like 2 weeks. before that came and went. And it got relegated to the Cafe Press Store. And I don't know. I may eventually bring it back as, like, if we do something else, like, what's the one that everybody goes to now? Is like Redbubble or something? Or what is
well,
it?
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. So if we end up on one of those, maybe I'll bring it back as an optional item. But we won't make it the show logo again. I mean, the people were right. It doesn't really fit what we're about. And it's really not the message we want to send. So that's how we ended up with the logo that we now have. Our original business cards. Back in 2006, you had to say, because everyone would tell you, they can't listen to your podcast, they don't have an iPod. We had to put on the business cards, you don't need an iPod to listen to our show. You just go to the URL. Well, now we moved from that to, as of today, people are mostly consuming our show through direct downloads, Google, iHeartRadio. I mean, things that didn't even exist as podcatching things, right. I guess, you know, back then. We created our own website. We started our own forums. Now social media has become so distributed that we have went from forums. Now we've got Discord and Facebook groups. And
for a while, there was a big push to have the website have blogs.
Mm-hmm.
Brought in a couple people that would do recurring columns.
Well, we had Seamus Young for a while did a comic on our site that actually was stressing the site because it was so popular. It was called Chainmail Bikini, and they had their own drama that had nothing to do with us.
Right.
And that eventually wrapped up, and I honestly don't know. Well, I know Seamus Youngstar. I still see him pop up from time to time. I don't know what happened to the artist from that, to be completely honest. Man, what's some other stuff that's occurred along the way?
For a while there, well, it still exists. There's a separate Skies of Glass website. For a while there, there was... Did you publish the comic book?
That's the one that, so I tell you, my worst run with artists, and I've got yet another one now that I'm trying to work with, is there is a graphic novel I have been trying to get made for almost as long as Fear the Boot has existed. And by the way, lest anyone ever worry about this or think this is where my failure comes from, I am a paying person.
You're not paying an exposure.
I'm not paying an exposure.
With cash money.
Yes. And I sit down with the artist up front and say, look, I want your input. I want you to be involved in this. Here's cash money. We're going to make this worth your while. You know, let's get this project going. I am now, I believe, on my sixth artist for this graphic novel.
Well, and where my confusion comes in on whether it was ever released or not is we've seen it. Because you were smart enough not to start releasing it until you had a huge back catalog. We've seen this back catalog that never got released, and it's really good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying this just because I wrote it. I think it's a great story. It's a story that I have been chewing on for a long time.
Yeah, and then Chris and I both did serial fiction
for Skies of Glass. Yeah, so let's talk Skies of Glass, because there's two kind of funny things in with that. So one is, for years, we absolutely would not do an actual play.
Right. There were I wouldn't say a majority of hosts. I would say it was a loud, large minority of hosts who absolutely refused to be recorded while they role played. And there were a couple of us who wanted to try it, were fine with it, but we couldn't get the group together who would be willing to do it.
Yeah. And I did it elsewhere and realized I had no problem with it as a side game.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want the only game I ever played to be just the actual play, because you do act differently on it.
Mm.
You are cognizant of the microphone being there. Eventually, you kind of forget, and it's not as big of a deal, but it's still, there's something that always holds you back, and you're getting ready to say something, and you realize, oh, wait, that's going to be recorded. And
yeah, which, I don't know if it
maybe
just...
Maybe you don't have that challenge.
I don't know if it's just, maybe it's just taken time. Maybe it's the fact that Brodor is like the grease for the wheels.
That's true, too. Whatever any of us have to say, he's going to be.
It might shock people if it comes from one of us, but it would never top whatever it is Brodor said in the session. But I don't know. But at some point, we're like, screw it. Let's try it. And so we did the AP, and that's done. It's not as big as the primary show is, but it has done very well for itself.
It's hard to listen to 4 hours a session.
Yeah, sure. And
you remember the first AP we actually did, wasn't that?
It was a damn disaster.
No, I'm going back. Well, yes, we have mechanical issues with it, but for Fear the Con, whatever number that we did the Kickstarter backer.
Yeah.
We did a small Skies of Glass actual play that we released to those people.
I thought that was later. I thought the D&D actual play came first.
This was a one-shot game that you ran.
Yeah, the Skies of Glass Blackbird. I thought, though, Stonekeep, the D&D game, was before that, and that was a damn disaster, because Chris wouldn't stop making obscene commentary in the chat. And so that's, Pat was literally getting a blowjob.
Well, I'm not counting that one, because we never released any of that.
Yeah.
This, at least, we released to a small number of people.
Okay, fair enough.
So, and it was one of those, sure, we could do it, because we're not releasing it for everyone. It's just a small number of people.
Yeah, I'll just choke through it and be done with it. But, so yeah, the AP's in there. What's some stuff we've changed our opinions on over the years? One of them, I don't know if it's a change of opinion or just whatever. You guys as the audience have more of an impact on us than you know. And it's not just in the way that we conduct ourselves, because that definitely has happened. So some of the ways we talk and the things we say and whatnot. But through Fear the Con, through you guys, when we came on the show, we were talking about what we'll call more modern role-playing concepts. The idea that you don't have to be bound by the rules, you can be a little more narrative, whatever. But we were doing it in the framework of 1980s into maybe early 90s games. You know, these games were all by this point 10, 15 years outdated. And a lot of people called us on that in the early part of the show of, everything you're talking about is out of print. Why aren't you talking about this game and this game and this game?
You're a BattleTech podcast.
Oh, still are. Should be. But we moved from that. I mean, we went to like Fear the Con, and all of a sudden people like, you know, Meow Meow or whatever. These people come along and start introducing us to games like you guys. Okay. Mm. You start introducing us to games like Dread, to things like Apocalypse, to things like Fate. And all of a sudden we start seeing all of these other game types. People's different homebrews, you know, whatever. And of course, we had our own homebrews. Most of my homebrews have been around since they all popped up about the same time, which is the early 90s. Skies of Glass, Epoch of Rhysos, whatnot. These all popped up about that time. And we suddenly started seeing all these other ways of these other games. And they became part of what excites us. They became part of our lexicon. They, you know, they changed the show. Because we started responding to what we were getting from you guys. You know, you guys pointed us to titles that were pretty cool, or to ideas that were pretty cool, or to communities that were pretty cool. And we just, you know, just kind of absorbed that. We just sort of pulled that into our consciousness and added that to the show.
Yeah, I know, Chad, I don't think you ever had any desire to build a role-playing game before like going through Dread and some of those others that started giving you these ideas.
Well, no, I did, actually. I had worked on other role-playing games before, but they never gotten anywhere. I had always liked the idea of writing a role-playing game. It's just that I wasn't really a writer, so I never really did anything with it. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I said Fear the Cons for me are a chance to try out new games.
Mm-hmm.
I always try to get in at least a couple games that I've never played before, see what new systems are like, see what other GMs are like. A lot of my GMing style, well, first of all of my GMing style has been created on the show.
Right.
I started on the show without ever having ran a game. I started on the show barely having played games and having Skies of Glass really be the only system that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Going to now, I run games without thinking about it. I mean, yeah. I can do a games completely off the top of my head, like Chad, where I sit down and I've got nothing. I can do games where I've planned everything out, like Dan, and sit down. I tend to fall in between, but I tend to fall more on the Chad side for a lot of my games. But I can do con games now. Mm-hmm. I do organized play games. I can do.
What was the first game you ran?
First time I tried to run was a failure.
But what was the game?
It was when I tried the Mutants and Masterminds game.
Ah, okay.
And I realized that I had all of this character stuff and I didn't have a story.
Mm.
The first time that I ran a successful session was in the Revolving GM game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first time I ran something not for you guys was Skies of Glass at Fear the Con 3. I ran it in two slots.
Nice.
You know, that's something else that has changed, I think, within RPG media as a whole, and I don't think it affected us all that much because we were never part of it, which is gaming media is a lot less productized than it used to be. Like when we first started doing Fear the Boot, there were two major things about gaming media that were different. One is that it tended to follow a news magazine format. You know, they had segments and stingers and bumpers and all this, you know, real, we're going to do 10 minutes of this and 15 minutes of that, then 5 minutes of something that somebody else recorded and sent in. And we didn't do that. We just had an open discussion. We had a roundtable discussion, which is what we still do to this day. But something else that was really big at the time that we never got that much into. And now I'm not saying there aren't shows that do it, but I will say it is not nearly as dominant as it used to be. Is people used to get really hardcore on products and industry news.
Right.
Of this is what's coming out, and we're going to talk to the creator such and such, and we're going to go through this book. And I mean, we tried our hand at that a little bit with that horrible Tolus review and whatnot.
In the horrible Tolus game, it cost like $10,000 or something.
And it was just like...
Does anyone still own one of those super expensive Tolus books
yes.
and still play it? Have
okay.
you gotten your money?
It's the latter question. Does anyone still own it? The answer, I'm sure, is yes. Because RPG players, we're pack rats.
Yeah, you are, but yeah.
Well, no, I think most are. Man, most people have these huge gaming libraries.
Yeah, I mean, I've got shelves of gaming books that I will never use in my basement.
Yeah.
We were at Caleb's house for a gaming... you know, board game night, and we saw his collection.
You don't throw your stuff out. I mean, unless it's destroyed.
Or unless you move to Alaska.
Okay, well, let me rephrase that to the non-specific you, not you, Chad.
Because I throw my stuff out. I hate stuff.
Yeah. But a lot of gamers, myself included, I don't throw my stuff out. Unless it's just destroyed and unusable.
If I can't sell my stuff, it goes in the trash.
I have
or
a
Goodwill.
Huge Battletech collection. Because Chad doesn't keep his stuff.
Right.
And I mean, a box higher than the table that the microphones are sitting on, full of Battletech books is what I got from
And
him.
We got all the fun we could squeeze out of that Battletech set, and I was done with it. Moved on. Here you go.
Yeah, I
keep stuff when others will keep it? Well, not for you. They'll just keep it.
Yeah, all right. Well, and I suppose that is a fair question of, if you're going to give it to somebody who will get more use out of it than you are.
Yeah.
But I find myself, I mean, I still dust off these books. I run them from time to time. I use them as resources. I use them for inspiration. And some of it is maybe, I don't know. It's like throwing away an old photo because I look at these and I remember so many experiences. And it's not per se that I'm trying to recapture those experiences, not in the new sense. Like, right, this is not... We talked about this some episodes back of trying to recreate a game. And it's not even about that, but it's like looking at a photograph. You know, if you just kind of think, wow, I remember when that happened. And I don't keep a lot of photos, but I do keep a lot of things that remind me of people and experiences. I could say, for example, one of the best trips I ever went on, it was me and Carla, Pat and Beth, and then my sister, Christina, and her husband, Adam, not to be confused with the ex-host. And the six of us went on a cruise, and it was just outstanding. And we had a great time. And I have almost no pictures of it. In fact, I don't know that I have any pictures of it, except the ones that other people took. But what I have that reminds me of that, that will always remind me of that, is queen conch shells that I pulled out of the ocean just off of the shore of Grand Turk. And, when I look at those, I remember that. I remember wading through or swimming through at times, waist deep water, looking at all the starfish and the tropical fish and all the colorful stuff and seahorses and squid, and then pulling up these queen conch shells. And they're huge. If you've never seen one, they're about the size of like a cantaloupe. I mean, they're big. If you've never seen a cantaloupe, it's about the size of a queen conch. And I had five of them because I found five really good ones. I had five of them, and I'm trying to carry them back to shore, but there's these horrible waves because they're breaking off the rocks. It's not a beach. So they're breaking off these rocks and knocking me over, and so I'm getting then drug along these rocks. My chest is getting all torn up, but I will not let go of these damn queen conchs. All five of them made it back to shore. And so, you know...
That sounds like a horrible story to remember. You're out in the sun. You're getting your chest bashed up with rocks.
Dude, I was having a great time. The people on shore thought it was hilarious. That tells me more of a story than a picture will. I mean, it's just writing a role-playing book is the same way. I look at the role-playing books. Somebody made us, there's all kinds of stuff people have given us over the years that you guys send in random stuff, and I don't get rid of it because it reminds me. I've got, you know, right over there is the set that Heather Fisher gave to me of the clan mech with its background, you know, its little diorama or whatever, or its panorama. I don't know what the artistic term is for that. But, you know, I've got Boots, the Fear the Boot, My Little Pony.
The dice bag I have sitting out on the table out there for gaming came from a listener. The dice bag I use on a regular basis at gaming came from a listener.
It's crazy, man. I walk into, see, all right, this is something, and it's really hard.
People don't send me anything. They hate me.
It's really hard.
You got a toaster.
I did get a toaster.
It's okay.
I got a Hello Kitty toaster. So, and guess what I did this morning? I made toast in my Hello Kitty toaster.
So this is one
don't
of the
be jelly wing. Get it? Toast, jelly.
And jelly, jelly, yes.
I got it.
Yeah,
I don't want it, but I got it.
I'm just buttering you up. You love puns.
You've left the show in a jam. Puns have been with the show since the beginning, and they will be here through its end.
Because puns are wonderful.
If I drop dead at the mics, a pun will be the last thing to come out of my mouth.
That's right.
I smell toast. This show is burnt, and then my head is going to drop dead on the, and the show will be over because it'll have been burnt. So
that's true.
All right, but let me, I don't know how to talk about this one without it sounding like humble bragging. It's not.
But you're the best role-playing podcast on the internet. Not to humble brag.
No.
Hashtag, yes, I am.
Do you know how weird it is? And I'm saying this not to the people at the table. I'm saying this to listeners. All right, so I'm not usually, because by the way, I've made no secret of the fact that I have an anxiety disorder. I really struggle being around people I don't know, speaking in front of groups of people. It's very difficult for me. A lot of the times you see me speaking at an event, I'm either on Valium or alcohol or both. But what makes podcasting easy, and this isn't what I wanted to talk about, I'll get to that in a second. What makes podcasting easy is I don't pay attention to the mics. I just look at Wayne, I look at Chad. I understand there is a theoretical listener who may or may not respond to what, but you're like a Schrodinger's cat to me, okay? You may or may not exist. I really haven't actualized that until I open the box and find a cat. And now suddenly the cat becomes a thing.
Which is why I don't think you'd ever do well with a long-term solo show.
Well, I think I could, but only if it was a very short format. Like it'd have to be like a 5 or 10 minute Dan's thought of the day. And right. Then the occasional Dan Eckscher on like Capital Ship Combat or Transformers or something.
Yeah, because let's face it. When you go on a Capital Ship Combat lecture, we could be sitting at the table here. That doesn't matter. We're zoned. Tuned out.
Gone. I'm flying with the Capital Ships out in space.
Ooh, outstanding. Full Newtonian physics, I hope.
I don't know. You'd have to start talking then. I get that glazed over look in my eyes. Wake me up and then I'll tell you.
So one of the things that is really weird, okay, backing up, I am speaking to directly...
This image of a capital ship slowly backing up, beeping in space, and then you're on the bridge going, why can we hear the beeping in space? Why is it even backing up?
No, the ship would have to do a flip burn.
Yeah, they actually made a joke about that in Mass Effect 2, because Shepard talks to one of the guys of the Citadel who sells flight computer software. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you would not believe how many times I get people trying to turn it saying, my ship's turning around. Then he and Shepard at the same time say, but I'm only halfway there. Because you have to do the opposite burn to decelerate. Yeah. It's funny because they never deal with that at any point in Mass Effect. They never deal with the physics of it all. But they do mention that there's a flip burn. But anyway, all right. So
fascinating.
I am now speaking directly and solely to the listener, okay? Not to the people at the table. In fact, I'm even looking at a wall, so I'm not looking at Wayne or Chad.
You're looking at Brodor's list.
So one of the, probably the strangest thing about doing this show is the idea that somebody consumes it. And I don't mean that from a standpoint of we have X number of listeners. I mean, walking into a convention and people hear your voice or see a name tag and walk up to you and say, oh my gosh, I'm so glad to meet you. Would you sign my this or that? I had somebody who was starting a podcast who wanted me to sign his starting podcast gear.
Someone at FearTheCon 3 had us sign one of the burned copies of the episode.
Yeah.
And that was the weirdest feeling for me that someone's asking.
Look, I don't know how to put this any more plainly than who the fuck am I? You know, and that's not, maybe it's a rhetorical question, maybe it's not, but I mean, there is nothing special about us. There is nothing special about what we do. There is nothing all that whatever, at least to us. But when we go out there, and I try very hard on the show, I always refer to you guys as listeners. That's the word I try to always use, is listeners, consumers maybe, because I try to describe it in neutral terms. To me, fan is a label you get to pick for yourself. I will not call anyone that listens to the show a fan. That is your choice to say you are a fan. It is not my label to give. But when people walk up to you and describe themselves, they say, I am a fan of you, or I'm a fan of what you create. It is very, very disorienting. And I don't mean that to belittle or to make uncomfortable anyone who has said this to us. I appreciate it. It means a lot to me. It's a great thing, but it is the sort of thing that nothing that I did in the course of this show ever prepared me for. There were things that prepared me for criticism, things that prepared me for this, that, the other. There are friends that helped me through things. There are friends that helped me get through the whole debacle with the Ennies that we went through back in 2007 or 2008. That was a total show.
That was actually probably the best press you could have ever got for the podcast.
Oh, yeah, especially, well, maybe we'll come back to the Ennies here and talk about some of the things that happened with that. But that is such a disorienting thing. Yeah, I'm not a movie star. I'm not a hit singer. You know, none of us are, right? I'm just a regular dude. I wake up. I have my pets. I go to my job. My life has the same kind of drama yours does. I mean, look, there's probably going to be a little bit of a pause in the show. And part of the reason that the episodes lately have had such a weird release schedule. And I mean, this really isn't a secret. Many people already know, as I'm going through a divorce right now. And that already has caused some interruption to the show releases because I'm dealing with that. And in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be moving out. And so that's going to cause a disruption.
If you can find your way through the mansion.
If I can find my way. If I can find my way. I'm going to follow the string back to the entrance.
Right.
But
I mean, it's going to have all this impact on Dan's life. But the really the sad part about it, we can't make jokes like that anymore.
I know.
As I'm moving into a much more regular place.
We can't ride the horses to the recording studio anymore. That's what really is disappointing to me.
Following the sound of the horses is how my butlers find their way.
True. They won't be able to find you now. So,
but the point is that there is nothing unique about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we appreciate the Patreon support. You guys make a lot of things possible because hosting the show is not free. The equipment is not free. Aisha's not doing the audio editing for the exposure. I pay her because I'm not an asshole, you know.
And no, we tried the exposure thing. She told us to get bent, so now we have to do cash money.
And by her doing it, Dan is so much more personable again.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So you can see our Patreon numbers. We don't hide them. We're not getting rich off this. There is nothing unique about my life, right? It is just like yours. Until I walk into Gen Con and somebody sees my name tag or hears my voice, because many people don't know what I look like. They've just heard me on the show. And all of a sudden, people start reacting. And it's like, this isn't right. Like, this shouldn't be part of my life.
So
it's so surreal.
I've only gone to one Gen Con. And this was one where we did the most media coverage we did for any Gen Con. This was the one where Chris has the microphones with the Fear the Boot thing around it.
Yeah.
And we're wearing like Fear the Boot shirts, and it's very obvious. And someone comes running down the hall because they see all the logos, and she's like, oh my God, it's Fear the Boot. That was my first experience with Gen Con and my first experience with that of they saw from across the hall and came running. And it's like, why?
And then we had our two bits of infamy. One was the Ennies, and then the other was getting kicked out of Margaret Weiss Productions' table because of the riff track we made for the Dragonlance movie.
And then eventually having Tracy Hickman on the show interviewing after John's comment about he only got into podcasting to
Tracy Hickman.
Yeah. Very true.
Which, you, by the way, there's a video of that. If I can find it, I might link that off the show notes of John's accepted speech for the Robin Laws Award.
So the other one, since we're talking about linking things that I think we should link, Fear the Con 3. I'm going to go back to that one. I'm pretty sure it was 3, not 4. We've talked about it a few times on the air. Noble Bear made a card game. FTW?
Fear the Boot for the Win.
Yep. Yeah. And after one of the nights there, Dan and I are sitting there, and he goes through the deck of cards. The cards has forum posters are on it, and we all have cards on it. And he's going through saying what each person means. That is an incredibly, like, that's a community thing. That's not even just a podcast thing. And after all of this time from 3 till now, you can go out and buy that now.
Yeah, I'll link that in the show notes because, yeah, you can now buy the card game. It's available on Drive-Thru.
And having played the game, I played earlier versions. I don't know what the current version compares to. Had a lot of fun playing it. And the cards are a lot of in-jokes, a lot of things like that, but that was fun.
Yeah, because I think the at least how it played before was you pick a host card, and that's the host you play, and you're basically trying to garner a faction of the community to support you the most. Mm-hmm. And each person's worth different point values, and there's different things you can do, like sock puppets and crap.
Ban
like
hammers.
Yeah, you can ban people. You know, those on the flip side of talking about people recognizing us, one of the things that has changed in me as I've done this show, and I don't know if this is getting used to it. I don't know if this is developing thicker skin. I don't know if it's mellowing with age. I don't know if it's just I've become too distracted by other things to notice. But criticism, especially when it was mean-spirited, really, really profoundly bothered me when we started the show. The first negative review we got was, it was on iTunes, and the exact phrasing was, I think it was something like, bad advice poorly dispensed, which now I want to get on a t-shirt. But at the time, and that really bothered me.
So that was kind of how I reacted to my first, you know, criticism. I took the phrase that was in that criticism, which was a comment on the episode I was on, and I made that my forum, was it footer?
Yeah, sig line.
Yeah. I made that my sig line. That was my sig line for like 2 years. Was the first piece of criticism that I got. And I did it that way for two reasons. One, it affected me. Two, I needed to remind myself that it was out there and that I couldn't let things like that affect me.
Yeah.
And putting it in my face for every time I posted was my way to make a joke about it, make it funny, but keep myself grounded.
Because there's, I mean, generally speaking, two kinds of criticism you can get.
Good ones, and people are wrong.
Well, okay, I guess if you want to divide that way three ways, which is they're right, or maybe it's a quadrant, because you can have on one axis they're right and they're wrong, right? So they're correct about what they say, they're wrong about what they say, or somewhere in the middle it's debatable. But then on the other axis, you can have they're being polite, they're being courteous, they're being well-mannered, versus they're being an asshole.
Then there is constructive versus non-constructive. So I could look at Chad and say, Chad, you're a dick. That is not constructive. I could say, Chad, you're a dick because you're wearing a green hoodie.
I like green. I like hoodies.
That is at least
constructive. And I'm awesome. So
it is.
I don't care.
I wouldn't even say that one is constructive, but that is actionable.
Right.
In reality, Chad. Actionable
for me to go, whoop.
Yeah. And in reality, Chad knows I love hoodies, so I would never insult a hoodie.
And he loves Chad in hoodies, too.
But it was really rough to get criticism, particularly when it was stated in a mean spirit. And
it was like sometimes people forgot that we were people.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even just criticism against us. So, like, I would see something that would be said, and it wouldn't be about me. It would be about Chad. My friend just got attacked. I'm pissed off.
You're cheering.
Do you know how much I don't post on the internet as a result of this show? And what I mean by that is because of the fact that I realize, number one, some number of people are paying attention to what I say. And if nothing else, I feel I owe it to these people to not be offensive, to set some kind of a good example, to at least be a passable human being. But then secondly, because of the fact that I don't want to deal with the drama that that's going to invite, it really does limit how much I say on the internet. This is why if you look at any of my social media accounts, it's just such neutral banality. You know, I very rarely post anything that's serious. I say fundamentally almost, if not totally, nothing about politics or religion.
If it's not offensive, it comes from Gnarl.
And well, yeah, because then it's Ivan. I'm not sure if it's a joke sometimes. But he was singing Baby Shark, just to get that stuck in everyone's head. If you're a parent of a young child,
okay, so I know what Baby Shark is now.
Yeah.
I didn't know it before a few weeks ago, and I don't know
what it is.
I had no idea that this was a meme.
Sky's too old, so yeah. If he was younger, you would know what Baby Shark is, and you would be prepared to kill me for having just put it back in your head.
So my experience with this, because this is another, I went out and did something fun without bringing Dan with me.
Yeah.
I went to an anime convention a few weeks ago, and one of the things at the end of it was a
One Punch Man forum that you totally denied Dan going to?
Nope. It was an anime review, or it was a cosplay review, where there was a group of strippers / cabaret people that came from Tennessee.
And that kind of review.
Did a strip show.
R-E-V-U-E, not R-E-V-I-E-W.
Yep. The MC was dressed up as a meme, and the song she danced to was Baby Shark. Afterwards, I'm like, well, it's because she talked about being a meme. And so afterwards, like the week after, I'm like, what the hell was that?
It's this kid.
And so I went and looked up Baby Shark.
Yeah. So, but I think part of the other thing is, though, after you've been on the other side of it, look, there are people that are out there who are as famous as or substantially more famous than I am that I profoundly dislike. And I may dislike them because of how they conduct themselves. I may dislike them for personal reasons. They've been an asshole to me, or I've just seen them be an asshole to people in general. I may dislike them.
Why did you motion to me?
I actually motioned at the wall on that one. I may dislike them because of the fact that I wildly disagree with their political or religious views, but they have something they have done, or maybe I just dislike their product. Maybe I have nothing against them, but I think their YouTube channel or whatever it is they make is just crap. I don't say anything. I don't do anything. Like, I don't thumbs down things. I don't comment. If I don't like it, I just turn it off. And
you what?
Yeah.
And in this day and age?
And if somebody states the opposite opinion of mine or a different opinion of mine on a political candidate or a religious topic or whatever it is, I just don't respond because of the fact that, well, first of all, I've been on the other side of that. But I received that kind of attack. And I know these people are real people. But secondly, because of the fact that, you know, people talk about, I mean, it's the whole be the change you want to see thing. If you don't want the internet to be a toxic place, if you don't want the country to be divided, stop saying divisive and topic things. It's really that simple.
There are people out there that would yell at us for not using this platform as a platform.
Oh, it happened.
To try to make change. And I know this happens.
It happened.
It's one thing I get frustrated with when I'm listening to a musician or I'm doing something in the media. I'm going out to find a podcast about writing. I'm going out to find a podcast about gaming, a podcast about whatever. That is the topic I'm looking for there. I have places I go for my politics. I have places I go for things like that. It is not my writing podcast. And I get really frustrated when I get preached to or when I get lectured when that's not what I went there for.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was the Bush Gore or Bush Kerry election. I think it was Bush Gore. And oh no, I'm sorry. Which one was it? I guess it would have had to have been. I'm getting old here. I'm losing track of
Bush
time.
Gore was 2000, so that was too far back.
So 2004 would also be 2000.
Was it the Dewey Truman?
Sure. You know what? It was the Dewey Truman one. Mm-hmm. And we back to Dewey.
Fear
the Boot wrote that paper.
Nobody knew who Truman was.
That newspaper headline. Yeah. All right. So whatever election was, an election. I don't remember what it was. It was not the most recent one. All right. So but there was one of the presidential elections where somebody wrote in, and I should say some buddies wrote in and told me that we had a duty to use our platform.
You said duty.
Well, and that's about how I think. And I don't have any strong opinion on the person because I'm sure they meant well, right? Mm-hmm. I believe this of people I agree with and disagree with, that just because you and I disagree doesn't mean you're a bad person, right? I believe good people can arrive at different conclusions and do so with an honest heart. I realize it's a shocking thing to say nowadays, but I fully believe this. But there was somebody who wrote in and said that we had a duty to use the platform that we had to speak out about this. Well, I think it was an election. And I don't remember how I replied. But here's what went through my head was two things. One, do I? Mm-hmm. And I mean that in the rhetorical sense, because the answer is no, yeah. I don't. I mean, it's look, I mean, first of all, it's my platform, our platform. I'll do whatever the hell I want with it. But secondly, is damn, people lose their minds. People need a break. People need to be able to get away from that stuff and just sit back and relax and feel a little bit chill, you know, unpucker, feel a little bit safe, not thinking they're about to get blindsided by something offensive to them. And think about mechs and dwarves and skies of glass. And I was about to say nuclear bombs, but maybe that's a little too real. But the point is, you know, people need that space to think about the fiction and such. And that's what we offer. And this is a service to humanity because people need that escape. Escapism is healthy to an extent, and it has been around as long as human culture has been. But secondly, it's like, with all respect to these people, what makes you think my opinion is going to line up with yours? Yeah. What if I use my platform and I come out swinging on the other side? Then how are you going to feel about me?
Yep. And even a step from that, my issue with it is we're three guys that talk about role-playing games. Are you going to take your political advice from three guys that talk about role-playing games that you know nothing else? I know that all three of us are very well-informed and we look up things like, but how do you know that?
Right.
We're guys that play role-playing games. We have nothing about us that says we know anything more than anyone else on any of these political issues. And if you take your advice from us for that, you're kind of dumb.
Well, and look, if we're in a free society, this information's out there. If you need someone to tell you why a worldview, whatever that worldview is, may or may not be right and may or may not be plausible, look it up. If you are so lost on something, whether it's an interpersonal issue or a worldview issue, that you really, I mean, you are fundamentally lost and you need Dan from Fear of the Boot to shape your view, I will provide that service for you. And probably it will begin with trying to help you figure it out for yourself.
Right.
But
and in private.
And in private, because that's not what the show has ever been about. It's not what it ever will be about. If people are going to love or hate me, I at least want it to be for what we produced. And here's, let me give you an example. Back before I made this show, I felt it was fair to have an opinion, potentially even a negative one, about what somebody was selling themselves on. All right. What I mean is if a female singer comes out and she sings a song and my immediate first comment is about how she looks. Okay, that's probably a bit misogynist. That's not really fair to her. But if my first comment is I like or don't like her singing, I at least think that's on table. That's the product she's selling. Conversely, if a model comes along who is selling themselves on their looks, I think that's fair and on the table. All right. Now, in the same way, I think it is totally fair to have an opinion to judge us within the context of the podcast we create. And so that's part of why we curate the product the way we do, is because this is what we want to be known for. We don't want you to like or hate us for our religious views, our political views, because of the fact that we're just interrupting your day. We want us to be people that, you know, you can come to for your escape, and maybe you hate what we do. Okay, whatever. And where I think that I've grown in that, having been on the other side of it, is I've learned that when I have these opinions, I don't have to express them. I can look at somebody and say, wow, to me personally, this model's not that attractive. And yes, it is her look she's selling, or this singer is terrible, or this podcast is terrible, or this movie is terrible, or whatever. But that doesn't mean I have to put somebody on blast. That doesn't mean I have to run them all social.
You call yourself a Twitter user. You're just using social media wrong, my friend.
Apparently I am. Every time I go out on Twitter in particular, I get the idea I'm using it wrong, because I'm not sufficiently offensive and or enraged.
And thus, I don't use Facebook anymore. I used to use Facebook a lot. I used Twitter for a while because it was I'll admit, I created my Twitter account. I think it even has FTB in the name of it. And it was created after I joined the podcast for the sole purpose of being able to tweet things out and talk to people.
I still have
from
fun.
The podcast.
I mean, it's banal observations, but I still have one. Like, there was one where I went, I think I put this on Twitter. I went to see, I think it was Dunkirk, and they had on the marquee.
Oh, Tom Hardy.
They had a marquee that was like LED lights, so spelling out the name of the show, and it was in a Dolby Atmos theater, okay?
Right.
So what it said was DAT space Dunkirk. So I took a picture of that and said, I'm about to see dat Dunkirk. You know, just crap like that. Or I, Gnarl just sent a picture to Tito's Vodka because they have a thing on the bottle now, because I guess they donate part of the sale to a pet charity that says vodka for dog people. And so he was thanking them for finally making a product that was target marketed to not dog space people, but dog people.
Right.
And so it was just crap like that. Just me having fun. I was commenting today about wanting to see a Power Girl movie before. I don't remember.
I kind of missed that. That was something like on Facebook. I would go to conventions, take pictures, post pictures. I would go to concerts. I had a concert this last weekend. I took a bunch of pictures. I didn't share them anywhere because to me, social media is kind of
good because it's awful. Dead. It's awful to share pictures on Facebook because they shrink the size of the picture. They compress the file and it pixelates the picture. And now they have your picture. So this nice big picture you took with your big expensive phone and great camera is now a small crap picture. And then you say to yourself, well, my photos are up on Facebook. I need some space on my phone, so I'm going to delete all my pictures.
Oh, no, that's not me because I back up my data and right. Don't have any of that. But now I have all these pictures and I have all of these experiences that I don't share with anyone.
That's not and sad. That's sad called what people used to do.
I know, but it was one of those things where for a while there, I got active in Facebook and talked to people and a lot of the listeners were a real community that you would get involved with. You still do some of that on Discord, but I hardly ever pop in even there. And I do kind of miss some of those interactions.
It's mostly because
at this point, social media is dead to me because it's all vitriol.
Yeah. I'm active on our Fear the Boot Facebook group. I'm active on our Fear the Boot Discord. I'm active on our Fear the Boot forums because I just talk to people. I like talking to people, but yeah.
I bounce in and out of them. I check the forums every so often. I've been much better with my email. Not perfect, but much better than I used to be. And I think probably because it's less intimidating because we used to host it ourselves on Smarter Mail. I moved it to Google. And it used to be so intimidating because I see like 150 messages a day. Now, the truth is probably 145 were spam.
Right.
But all I see is 150 messages I got to look at today. And it's like, well, when am I going to do this? Well, 10 days later, that's 1,500 messages.
Yeah.
And pretty soon it's like, man, fuck it. I can't do this. I don't have a secretary. But now that I have a Google one that does a much better job of filtering the spam, I only actually see the messages that are directed to me. I do a much better job about it. But no, I do. I am still on social media, but I'm much more, I watch my interactions a lot more. You know, I say if somebody's off on their political diatribe or their religious diatribe or they're just angry or whatever, that's cool. You know what? Mm-hmm. It's your space. You can say whatever you want, say whatever you need to. I'm not telling you not to say it. All I'm saying is I'm probably not going to read it.
Yeah.
And that's chill. You know, that's just how life works. You do you, I do me, and I'm okay with that. I'm fine. I can coexist with people. You don't have to be just like me. As long as you're courteous to me, we can work that out. You know, everything else is gravy. So one of the things people have been asking me about is, what are we going to do with some of these other ideas we've been sitting on?
Are you going to finally tell us what's going to happen with Brain On?
No. No, we're not. We recorded an episode.
I will, however.
It's coming out any minute. Just hold your breath.
Several people have asked, what, if anything, I'm going to do with Skies of Glass, now that we've been doing the AP? And the answer is this. As I said earlier, I'm going through a pretty big change in my personal life. I'm about to move.
And you're losing all your horses.
I'm losing my horses, most of my servants. Three of them are coming with me.
Excellent. Well, that's good.
The butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker.
Right.
Because God knows I need food. I need food. Meat, bread,
you got all this candles. Meat, so you need bread to make the sandwich.
Yes.
And you can't do it in the dark. I mean, you're not a peasant.
So once I get past that, though, what my intention is, and I haven't decided yet how I'm going to do this exactly, but what I'm thinking about doing or the direction I'm thinking right now is that I'm going to start a rules wiki for Skies of Glass, along with kind of some high level directives about what I kind of think about the setting and such, because Skies of Glass is meant to be a plug and play game insofar as I intentionally only define very small portions of the world. I want you, in fact, there's some people that have already done some really cool stuff with this. I want you to decide for yourself what happened to your hometown or your favorite city, whatever. I want you to do that.
Or your least favorite city.
Or your least favorite city. You know, I want you guys to do that. I intentionally define very little of the world because it's meant to be about the micro setting. It's, I mean, Skies of Glass is really not meant to be about places like, if you're listening to the AP, you'll know what I mean, St. Louis or Jacksonville. Skies of Glass is meant to be about places like Herman and about places like Dixon. And so, I mean, that's really what it's meant to be about, is these small, isolated towns and what the culture's like within them. And I've done a terrible job of doing that in the current AP, but that's what it's usually been. So my thought,
we're supposed to be broke and struggling. And
yeah.
Then, yeah.
So my thought is, what I'm going to do is create a wiki where I start putting the rules and create, I don't know, maybe it's going to be a Patreon level. Maybe I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with it, but somehow set up some way to get feedback from people and keep tweaking the wiki until I like where the rules are at. And then at that point, if it's doing well and people are actually enjoying it, look at putting it together into a published set of rules, like some rules in a setting, a quick setting guide or something like that, that's published in book form. So look for that probably sometime in mid-November, because maybe late November, because I'll be moving probably around the top of November. But obviously that's not a day, that's a process. So I'm hoping sometime in November that I will get out a start to that wiki. And I've already got the URL. I own skiesofglass.com and whatever. And so that's going to be something I want to do something with. And we actually have some ideas for some things past that. But rather than teasing 1,000 things we never do,
we'll tease one thing we'll never do.
No. Well, let's tease one thing and actually freaking do it.
What?
And since
that is not the Fear the Boot way.
No, it's not. But since I have so much of this already written down anyway, I mean, honestly, all this is going to consist of is me turning it from pieces of notebook paper and Google Docs into a wiki. That's really the material's already written. I just have to organize it into a different format. I mean, this is not creation so much as this transposition.
We talk a lot about the things that were brought up and ideas that didn't happen. I want to take a moment just to point out the thing. So a few things that did happen that were talked about and happened. Fear the Con. That's, how many years has Fear the Con ran?
Yeah.
Sojourn 1 and 2.
I don't know if it'll happen or not, but there's been a talk about Sojourn 3. I don't know if it's going to happen. People have asked.
Blood Moon Goblins.
Yeah.
If anyone else wants something else we've actually done.
Oh, we bombed at a lot of things. You and Chris's Skies of Glass fiction.
Made it from beginning to end.
Yeah. Chris's, I think his was called Coming Home and yours was Metropolis, if I'm remembering right. Skies of Glass
Metropolis.
And yeah, both of those, I believe, made it start to finish, if I'm not mistaken.
So it's easy to joke and talk about the things we did.
Oh, and there's
do.
A lot of
And we always forget about what we actually did put out.
Well,
what
is out there.
Chad has games that he created and put out there for free.
Let's talk about
award-winning games, Wayne. Award-winning.
Let's talk about the main product. Fear the Boot itself has gone on nearly every single week. Yes, we've missed some, but nearly every single week for 12 and a half years. That is no small amount of time.
That is a lot of hot air.
Do you realize when we started this podcast, D&D, people are going to, never mind. I was going to peg this to additions of D&D. I'm not.
Why don't you talk about alignment next?
Yeah. When Fear the Boot came out, lawful neutral, and now neutral evil. I don't know how it even relates, but.
Fear the Boot is older than Pathfinder.
Yes, that Fear the Boot is definitely older than Pathfinder.
Because I remember when Pathfinder came out, it was a
Gen Con. Because I know Fear the Boot is younger than 3.0.
But older than 4.
But I want to say older than 4. I want to say older than 3.5, but it may not be. I don't know. I know it's older than Pathfinder and it's older than 4.
I don't mark my passage of time by D&D editions.
Oh, I don't either.
I mark mine by data center moves.
That's true.
Data center moves. I just keep, you know what? I have a terrible sense of time. I just remember the date. I don't know why. May 15th of 2006. I don't know why it's burned into my mind, because I have a terrible sense of time. If you ask me about things, and this is an honest to God truth, yesterday, last week, last month, and last year are all pretty much the same day to me. I have no sense of time. I notice the passage of time going forward, but the past, I have no context of how long anything has been if I don't memorize the date. And there's a lot of events in my life, both good and bad, I could not tell you exactly when they occurred, only ballpark within about 3 years. So yeah, that's part of just how I exist. Sky is younger. Your son is younger than the show.
Yes, he is in junior high now.
Wayne, what's changed? So give me a couple things. What's changed in your life since you've started doing the show?
He has a beard now.
I have a beard now. That actually is a pretty big change.
Mm-hmm. And it's silly, right? Wade has a beard. Who cares? Yeah. You were super anti-beard. Like, no mustache, no goatee, no beard. You were.
I had never gone more than 2 weeks without shaving. And then for a no-shave.
In your whole life.
Yeah. For no-shave November, I grew it out and realized I really liked it.
Yeah, it looks good on you. I love it.
I just realized.
I bought a house during that time. I've gone through multiple jobs during that time.
Yeah, I bought a house, too.
Yeah, we had just moved out to ours not that long before because we had been living in an apartment. Mm-hmm. And we moved to a house not that long before Fear the Boot started. We moved from that house to this house, and now I'm about to move again. I'll still be staying in town. So let me stress, this may interrupt the show for a couple of weeks. It's not going to shut the show down. But I just realized, and this is kind of a big thing to me, and maybe some people won't get this way, and I know you'll get it. If I'm not mistaken, I've had 100% turnover in my pets.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
So when the show started, I had Pearl, who's still, I mean, I probably was closer to her than damn near any living thing, human or otherwise. I don't know if I put her as my number one, but she certainly is in the top three. She died. Carl at the time had Watson. He passed away at the time. I don't think we had gotten, if we had gotten Izzy, we had just gotten her. I don't think we had yet. So I think Izzy's younger than the show. We had not yet gotten our current cat. We had a different cat at the time. So I think we've had a complete turnover in the pet staffing.
I'm a dnip. Dual income, no pets.
You're a dimp.
Nimp.
Dimp. Dual income, no. Yeah,
pets.
Dimp doesn't work as well as dink.
Yeah, dink works great. Dual income, no kids. Yeah.
Only because Dawn's allergic to cats, because I know she wants one.
We almost got one. Years and years
I got ago. You all topped. All right, so exotic pets. Before the show.
Yeah, me time. I don't have any pets.
Oh, no, I know. But when I say all y'all, I mean possibly even everyone listening. So before the show started, I had a ferret, not that exotic. Okay, exotic-ish, but not that
Julie
exotic.
Julie has like 20.
Well, at least had. She only has about two. But after that, I had a pet prairie dog. And then we almost got a wallaby. There, we found a wallaby breeder out in this area. Believe it or not, they do make it to America. They're not controlled animals. Like, it's not like a lion or something. Like you
they're not going to break out and wipe out the hen population.
Because for anyone who doesn't know what a wallaby is, they're like miniature kangaroos, okay? And they are totally harmless. The only reason we did not end up getting it, we actually went to them, held them, had one picked out, had the money. Only reason we didn't was at the time, that was when we were still in St. Peter's, and that house backed up to a game trail, and there were too many wild animals that came by. And we weren't worried about the wallaby getting killed because we would have been able to, you know, safely fence it off. But they're kind of like rabbits in that if a predator comes at them, they can get so stressed, they actually have a heart attack and drop dead. And it was like, we don't have a way of really protecting it from that. And it's too likely where we live. So that's the only reason we didn't get one. But at the time, I told nobody because I just wanted to get a raw reaction. Mm. Like, this was going to be our YouTube moment of tell no one we have it and then film people when they come over and this freaking wallaby comes hopping down the hallway and like watch how long it takes people to process that they are seeing what they think they are seeing. That was going to be priceless. So now instead, now that I'm moving, the only one I'm taking with me is Charlie. So now I'm
Oh, good. Someone's going to smell my nuts when I come in again.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But it'll be less barking. And this makes space for my otter. So now I'm going to be back on the hunt for an otter.
That's very otter of you.
Yeah, it is.
That didn't quite work, but I'm sticking with it. Okay. I stand by it.
Something oysters. Yeah.
I got nothing. I'm shaking my head.
All right. The otter well, we're going to end on this then. You got to make a prediction for the future. Now, my future, I don't mean like the next year. I mean like Wayne, 5 years from now, where's role playing
going to
be?
Honestly, at this point, I think what we see now is going to continue for quite a while. We're going to have a ton of games out there. There isn't going to be big publishers with the exception of this is a subsidiary of something larger. Wizards of the Coast is not its own company. Mm-hmm. It's a sub company. We'll have one or two big ones still out like that. D&D is still going to exist, obviously. But honestly, I don't think we're going to see a lot of change in game type. We're going to have games everywhere with very little curation of what comes out. Some of them really good editing. Some of them never touched an editor.
Chad, do you have a prediction?
So I think over the next 5 years, I think that Wizards of the Coast, yeah, they're the ones who do D&D, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Wizards of the Coast, I have seen them doing something, and they're being very subtle about it, and I like it. they're promoting Dungeons and Dragons. And I don't mean just, oh, we're going to Gen Con and here's our booth and here's our big foam red dragon. What they're doing is that they are sponsoring things where they are having mainstream actors play D&D games. And they're also having them talk about
what is that show? Is it Critical Hits or
Critical
something?
Critical Hit is one of them. And I have been noticing, and again, it's not that it's not a huge marketing push. It's not like Super Bowl ads and all that sort of crap. But I have been noticing that there has been D&D product type placement mentions. Think about stuff like Stranger Things, all that sort of stuff, where they are very subtly pushing Dungeons and Dragons and the rising tide role-playing games in general into the public consciousness. Now, I don't think over the next 5 years you are going to see D&D is the next big thing. I think that over the next 5 years you are going to see it become just a bit more normalized and a bit more popular. I don't think that you are going to go into work and people are going to ask you, what do you do? And you say, I play a role-playing game. What's that? I think that you are going to find less of that, more people not playing. But again, it's just, I think they're very subtly impacting into the consciousness.
Well, and I think part of the reason they're able to do that is what we talked about recently with nostalgia. Mm-hmm. The generation now that's in control of what's out their media, what's willing to allow them to have those product placements is the generation that remembers it.
Yep.
Yeah. Gen X and Gen Y / millennials, whichever you prefer, are both a lot more nerdy than prior generations. Millennials more so than Gen X, but both are. But here's my prediction, and this one's going to go a little bit differently in terms of its content. So if you look back several years, people bought the creations, not the creators, and there was a big distinction between them. Now, it's not to say people weren't fans of something. It has been true for many years. Monty Cook can slap his name on something to move it. Like, you could sell Monty Cook's...
See, this role-playing game?
Cyanide cereal.
So many f***ing Monty Cooks in this thing.
Yeah, Monty Cook's Monty Cook is there's never too many cooks in the kitchen. And
oh, my God.
It's the full Monty.
But I'm not saying people will distinguish it that way. Okay, so I mean, I think right now there is something going on that has been a total disaster for every form of entertainment, which is people got on social media, and people includes content creators, actors, singers, writers, artists, all this kind of stuff. And they started getting a bit too honest and a bit too well-known. And by well-known, I don't mean famous. I mean like
infamous.
Yes. All the garbage coming out of their brains and out of their mouths, all the things they're doing to alienate people, all the things they're getting accused of, all the crap, all right, is making it, I think, people are starting to have a lot more difficulty separating the creation or the product from its creator or its producer. And so many companies and so many creators are just now starting to really pay a heavy price for that on every side of the political spectrum, that it is shrinking markets, it is alienating consumers, and some of the big companies now are really cracking down on that, on saying, if you're going to write for us or you're going to act for us or you're going to sing for us, you got to keep your pie hole closed on Twitter or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And I think we are going to see a return to not a lack of platform. I don't think social media is going anywhere, but I think people that want to get somewhere are going to start self-censoring themselves in a way that general professionals have had to for years. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see the creative arts follow suit in that. Now, I don't think it'll ever totally happen, but I think it will happen where companies, look, they want to make money. And that means selling to people. And that means it doesn't matter who they are or what they believe. And like I said, it's already starting to happen. And I think you're going to see people knowing less and less about the inner workings of the creators' minds. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, it's going to be much more like the 1990s than it is 2000. It will be, 2012 or 2015. So that's my prediction.
That only works with the company model. The individual creators will still.
Oh, they still can take a punch in the wallet. They can still take a punch in the wallet.
They can.
And I mean, I'm not saying this is 100%. I'm just saying I think there's going to be a change, right?
So are you saying that I should write a role-playing game and get on Twitter? and see how many people can punch my wallet?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I'll give you about three or four topics that you cannot shut up about. For, against, so doesn't
like,
matter.
Let it's me, like the negative verse Brodor rules list.
Yes.
You're going to give just me a turn list that hashtag. I can't stop talking
I will
about.
Give you four hashtags.
Oh, better idea. Because yeah. that only can only alienate like half the people.
Sure.
You and I will collaborate to make a game.
Oh, Dan will give us this list. I'll be on the other.
Yeah. And we will publicly fight with each other.
Yes.
And we'll see which one does better. It'll be like an A-B market test.
Right.
See what, like, they'll be effectively the same product.
And then Dan can come in and say, well, now, girls, you're both pretty. It's okay. And then we'll see if his stock rises.
Yeah. So what we can come up with a scenario where we create a product. And we'll create the scenario that if you buy it from Wayne.com, Wayne gets the money, and Wayne has one side set of views. If you buy it from Chad.com, mm-hmm. Chad gets the money, and Chad has a different set of views, and see where the money actually goes.
You know what we should do? We have Patreon. We have Tastemakers. We need the Tastemakers to give Wayne and I our views.
To give you your views? See, that we ought to like separate it. Like there's an episode of Simpsons where Homer's like, if you want to feel better about yourself, mail a dollar to me. And he got a robocaller, so it was doing that. And then the judge told him to call everyone back and apologize. So he just set the robocaller back up. And he's like, you know, I'm really sorry for the scam I ran. If you forgive me, please mail $1 to him. And then he gets this address. So we can have, like, if you agree with Chad, $2 level. If you agree with Wayne, $2 level. Yeah. If you agree with Brodor, $2 level.
But we got to do a Kickstarter to get this all going.
Yes,
so precisely. We need seed money. I mean, we need at least $150,000.
Yeah, I need a new keyboard to even type Brodor's name. So.
Right.
Anyway, thank you guys for tuning in for 12 and a half years. We really do appreciate it.
I don't.
This has been I know, you're contrarian. But this really has been a hell of a run, and we intend to keep going with it until, I mean, whatever. As Chad has said, then this is a saying he's had for probably 12 of those 12 and a half years. This show will never jump the shark. It is riding that bitch to glory.
That's right.
And we are still on top of that shark, waving a cowboy hat, Dr. Strangelove style, going over. So anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games. And we will catch you for a much more normal episode next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2018. Listeners are free to use this episode in any non-commercial endeavor so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the RPG Academy network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at therpgacademy.com/network.